Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about part 3, chapter 10, as was read by the lovely Simply Productive. Techrific says, thanks for the reading, Simply Productive, making Canada proud, I'm sure. Awesome accent, you need not have worried. Wasn't it Newt Scamander that said, my philosophy is that worrying means you suffer twice? Nice one, Newt Scamander. Good little motto, good little philosophy you got there. Kind of see the point there, see the truth in that. Simply Productive says, lol, I talk way faster than I thought I did. I know people have said I talk like a Gilmore Girl, but this just goes to show that I actually do. Good to know. Yeah, I did notice you talk really fast, which I thought might have just been nerves, like you were nervous or something like that. Or like you didn't want to feel like it's too slow. You didn't want people to be impatient with the pace. Yeah, I would probably say, not that it was bad, it was really actually pretty good. But you could afford to pace yourself a little slower next time you do a reading, if you want to do more readings, which we would love you to do. Yeah, just cruise through it rather than rush through it, I would say. Swim, said the Mama Fish. He says, geez Louise, 11, can you be any more judgmental and self-righteous? First, he ignores everything Dolly is saying about Kitty and what Dolly thinks of the situation, and just petulantly sulks and tries to storm off. Then he xenophobically freaks out about Dolly's children learning French. Then this childless man smugly reassures himself that his children will never misbehave because he will not spoil or pervert them. They will be splendid. The last bit, I admit, gave me a big belly laugh. Humans and their own beings, as soon as they emerge into the world, you play the cards you're dealt with. Simply Productive says, My personal favourite is when he compares the situation to having a dead child. Dead, in my translation. Even as I was reading that out loud, I thought to myself, what a prick. Don't compare the situation to dead children to a mother, for Pete's sake. Lol. He is just having a bad day, I guess. Hey, that's one thing I didn't ask you, Simply Productive, is what translation are you reading? Is it the Maud one? Swim said the Mama Fishy says, he has been enduring his older brother as a house guest for several days. Great reading. Simply Productive says, I am Norwegian. You have a very pleasant voice. Levin is still shying away from his emotions. At first it made me laugh, imagining him slowly backing away once Dolly refused to drop the subject. But it's starting to get annoying. Dolly is right. It's pride keeping him back. I do apologize. My phone keeps going meow, meow, like that. That's my phone. But there's everyone listening thinking, oh, my phone's buzzing. That's not your phone. Sorry. JMama8779 said, it's becoming clear that once Levin actually sees Kitty again, it will be all over. There's probably still a shot for both of them to end up together. After the prompt from the other day, I still do feel bad for Dolly. Levin would have been a good match for her. Simply Productive says, I agree with everyone else. Levin needs to get over himself. He needs to go out and get the girl and stop with his weird self-loathing. Oh dear. Well, remember way back when, in one of my posts, I compared my family members to Levin bros. Yes, I'm definitely still like the farmer Levin. Just yesterday, my mum said in another life, I would happily be a nun, and she's right. I have been too focused on mistakes I made as a youth and my general aimlessness, selling myself short. Levin is doing the exact same thing right now, and everyone is groaning, waiting for him to smarten up. I guess I should take that cue in real life also. Yeah, okay. I like this. I like getting to know the people of this community. This community, this project is as much about us, the people who are reading the book, as it is about the book. And as is this podcast. It's a podcast about people reading literature. And so we are the people of this podcast. And I think it's cool to to talk about, like, compare your own personal stuff going on to the characters and the events in the book. I really like that. Swim, said the mama fishy, replied, saying, I hope you do take that as a cue and to heart. My 88-year-old mother is spending her whole life not liking herself and being unhappy. Dad saw her worth, best dad ever, by the way, smiley face. In fact, all three of her kids see her worth, but no matter how we tell her, over and over, she rejects it all. At least she was self-aware. She said over and over to us, kids, don't be like me, unhappy and negative, and we're not. When my dad was dying, it's been 6 years, October 6th, she asked him what was she going to do once he was gone, and he replied, be happy. Such good advice. And again, getting to know the community. I love this. This little conversation in the thread is not necessarily about the book, but it is a conversation prompted by the book. And I think that's so cool. Simply Productive replied, if you guys don't mind me reading your personal asides here. I have been improving year over year. For example, I found out about Marie Kondo about a year or a bit before. Bit more before she became very famous, and I really followed her book about tidying up and discovered that I had utterly fallen for the lie that things can make you happy and that my unhappiness could be solved by buying more things. I learned to cherish more what I do own, and I found my life became more full of gratefulness. I guess to a degree I need to hold my own self in my hands and say, do I spark joy, and write down where I do. Focus less on my past. I was having a bit of a debate with my folks yesterday. My parents are very religious. My mum is currently in seminary. And we were discussing my issues with the church. Again, this is probably a conversation we have had 50 times over the last decade or more. But when I came to my usual point about how the church uses guilt to control others, my parents asked if that is really true or if I just focus on my own guilt and falsely attribute it to the church. They brought up some good points. I do believe I'm young enough to change. I just have to go ahead and do it. Year over year, I improve a lot, though, so we will see what happens. I think you're a good person, by the sound of things. The church is weird, really. When you look at it from the outside, it's a bunch of weird fairy tales that people swear by. They've got good morals, don't get me wrong. Those fairy tales have great lessons in them. But they're not true stories. Sorry if that offends anyone listening. They're true enough. They're true on a human level. True as... never mind. Yeah. Anyway. That's the conversation. I'm very, very tired. So I'm actually glad to be able to say today that Simply Productive is going to take it from here and read you chapter, 11. So please enjoy this reading by Simply Productive, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Simply Productive joining you again. It is about 3:30 p.m. my time, so I'm definitely not doing this like Ander, because I'm awake. Sorry, Ander. I couldn't help but poke a little bit of fun at you. After all, we hear you every day, so it feels like we're close friends, even though you probably don't feel that way. This is probably like when people meet celebrities, and the celebrity's like, I do not understand why you're being so weird. And everyone else is just like, but I see you in all these movies. You're so familiar to me. How dare you not recognize that we are the closest and best of friends? And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you get stalkers. All right, so jumping straight into Anna Karenina, Part 3, Chapter 11. In the middle of July, the elder of the village on Levin's sister's estates, about 15 miles from, Pokrovsko, sure, came to Levin to report on how things were going there and on the hay. The chief source of income on his sister's estate was from the riverside meadows. In former years, the hay had been bought by the peasants for 20 rubles the 3 acres. When Levin took over the management of the estate, he thought on examining the grasslands that they were worth more, and he fixed the price at 25 rubles the 3 acres. The peasants would not give that price, and, as Levin suspected, kept off other purchasers. Then Levin had driven over himself and arranged to have the grass cut partly by hired labor, partly at the payment of a certain proportion of the crop. His own peasants put every hindrance that they could in the way of this new arrangement, but it was carried out, and the first year the meadows had yielded a profit almost double. The previous year, which was the third year, the peasants had maintained the same opposition to the arrangement, and the hay had been cut on the same system. This year the peasants were doing all the mowing for a third of the hay crop, and the village elder had come now to announce that the hay that had been cut, and that, fearing rain, they had invited the counting house clerk over, had divided the crop in his presence, and had raked together 11 stacks as the owner's share. From the vague answers to his question, how much hay had been cut on the principal meadow, from the hurry of the village elder who had made the division, not asking leave, from the whole tone of the peasant, Levin perceived that there was something wrong in the division of the hay, and made up his mind to drive over himself to look into the matter. Arriving for dinner at the village, and leaving his horse at the cottage of an old friend of his, the husband of his brother's wet nurse, Levin went to see the old man in his bee house, wanting to find out from him the truth about the hay. Parmenich, a talkative, comely old man, gave Levin a very warm welcome, showed him all he was doing, told him everything about his bees and the swarms of that year. None of the readers are surprised, of course, that he's talking about bees again, but gave vague and unwilling answers to Levin's inquiries about the mowing. This confirmed Levin still more in his suspicions. He went to the hayfields and examined the stacks. The stacks could not possibly contain 50 wagon loads each, and to convict the peasants, Levin ordered the wagons that had carried the hay to be brought up directly to lift one stack and carry it into the barn. There turned out to be only 32 loads in the stack. In spite of the village elder's assertions about the compressibility of hay and its having settled down in the stacks, and his swearing that everything had been done in the fear of God, Levin stuck to his point that the hay had been divided without his orders, and that therefore he would not accept that hay as 50 loads to a stack. After a prolonged dispute, the matter was decided by the peasants taking these 11 stacks, reckoning them as 50 loads each. The arguments and division of the haycocks lasted the whole afternoon. I've been reading haystacks the whole time when it says haycocks. Nope, this one says haycocks, the rest says haystacks. I don't know if there's a difference. When the last of the hay had been divided, Levin, entrusting the superintendence of the rest of the counting house clerk, sat down on a haycock marked off by the stake of willow and looked admiringly at the wet meadow swarming with peasants. In front of him, in the bend of the river beyond the marsh, moved a bright-colored line of peasant women. The scattered hay was being rapidly formed into gray winding roads over the pale green stubble. After the women came the men with pitchforks, and from the gray rows they were growing up broad, high, soft haycocks. To the left, carts were rumbling over the meadow that had already been cleared, and one after the other, the haycocks vanished, flung up in huge forkfuls, and in their place they were rising heavy cartfuls of fragrant hay hanging over the horses' hindquarters. "What weather for haying? What hay it'll be," said an old man squatting down beside Levin. "It's tea, not hay. It's like scattering grain to the ducks, the way they pick it up," he added, pointing to the growing haycocks. "Since dinner time, they've carried a good half of it." "The lad's load, eh?" he shouted to a young peasant who drove by, standing in front of an empty cart, shaking the cord reins. "The last, Dad," the lad shouted back, pulling in the horse and smiling. He looked round at a bright, rosy-cheeked peasant girl who sat in the cart smiling too, and drove on. "Who is that, your son?" said Levin. "My baby," said the old man with a tender smile. "What a fine fellow!" "The lad's all right." "Married already?" "Yes, it's 2 years last St. Philip's Day." "Any children?" "Children, indeed. Why, for over a year, he was as innocent as a babe himself, and bashful, too," answered the old man. "Well, the hay, it's as fragrant as tea," he repeated, wishing to change the subject. Levin looked more attentively at Ivan Parmenov and his wife. They were loading a haycock onto the cart not far from him. Ivan Parmenov was standing on the cart, taking, laying in place, and stamping down the huge bundles of hay, which his pretty young wife deftly handed up at him, at first in armfuls, and then on pitchfork. The young wife worked easily, merriously, and dexterously. The close-packed hay did not once break off of her fork. First she gathered together, stuck the whole fork into it, then with a rapid, supple movement leaned the whole weight of her body on it, and at once with a bend of her back under the red belt she drew herself up, and arching her full bosom under the white smock, with a smart turn, swung the fork in her arms and flung the bundle of high hay onto the cart. Ivan, obviously doing his best to save her every minute of unnecessary labor, made haste, opening his arms to clutch the bundle and lay it in the cart. As she raked together what was left of the hay, the young wife took off the bits of hay that had fallen on her neck, and, straightening the red kerchief that had dropped forward over her white brow, not browned like her face by the sun, she crept under the cart to tie up the load. Ivan directed her how to fasten the cord to the crosspiece, and at something she said, he laughed aloud. In the expressions of both faces were to be seen vigorous, young, freshly awakened love. And that is the end of our chapter. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. We will talk to you again tomorrow.